I was covering my rent and my food using the loans I'd taken, and I was working during the summer, but that wasn't quite enough. And I actually got to a point at which, like, I was literally broke. And what I mean by that is, you know, I had $180 in a savings account. I had a $2 bill in my wallet. I still have that $2 bill today to remind myself of that point. But then I had like $800 on a credit card, and it was coming due really fast. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing. And most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. Welcome back to the show. We are moving into our fourth month of recording here on the Service and Wealth podcast. It's September, and that means that summer is on the calendar. It's over, but we're definitely in a transition time. You know, football is finally back on. I realize there's always going to be tension about, like, what is America's sport, and a lot of diehard folks and traditionalists will say that baseball is the American sport. And then I, you know, whether it's just the way I grew up, you know, I played baseball. I didn't play football. You know, parents wouldn't sign the waiver when I was little, so I just never got back to it. But maybe it was growing up in the Midwest, you know, growing up in Wisconsin. Sure, we had the Brewers, and, you know, back then for a while we had guys like Paul Molitor and Robin Yount and some decent, you know, I think we made it to the World Series once. But, you know, for whatever reason, baseball just doesn't resonate for me, you know. And so I spent all summer not paying attention to ESPN and not talking sports. And then football season rolls around and, you know, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to start planning my weekends around when I want to watch, like, you know, a bunch of, like, 20-year-olds run around and hit each other and throw a ball and run and do amazing, amazing things. And I guess even as you get older, you know, like, that doesn't really go away. There's sort of like this nostalgia or tribal, you know, mentality to it. And being in the Marine Corps for most of my adult life, you know, I guess it's questionable, like, when you ever actually become an adult. And, you know, as a total aside, like, I was reading a book that said that, like, every single person has, like, an age that they always think they are, and it has to do with something that happened at that age. And, like, I don't know exactly how old I think I am, but I still see myself and think of myself as, like, being in my early 20s, you know, maybe, like, 22 or 25. And so then I do stupid stuff, you know, and that's why old guys get hurt. That's why, like, you know, when you go out there for a beach run or a sports day and the battalion commander or the sergeant major or the command master chief or the squadron XO, like, they, like, pull a hammy and you're like, we were just playing softball. What is wrong with that guy? It's like, well, there's not anything wrong with us other than the fact that, like, our bodies are 45, 40 years old, but we think we're 20. And so, you know, I guess for that reason, like, it will always be like, football is here. That means it's time for fall. It's time for sports. And anyway, all that is, you know, just kind of like sort of a welcome to fall, a little bit of a transition. And also me telling a little bit of a story about myself and, like, why I still like college football so much, even though I'm in my mid 40s and I've got a kid and come run, you know, two different businesses and starting a, you know, another career. And, you know, like, life is plenty busy, way too busy to spend like 6 hours on a Saturday watching TV. But we do it, and it has to do with where we came from, how we grew up, how we see ourselves, what we think about. And that sort of like origin story or coming up narrative is important to understand in all things so that you can understand yourself, right? Like you have to, we're not a, you know, psychologist or, you know, therapist here. We can be, you know, but, if you want to understand like how you behave in friendships or relationships, you have to like go back and try to, you know, re-examine your childhood and your relationship with like your parents and your siblings and other kids at school, you know, and all that shapes you. And the reason why I'm rambling on about that a little bit is because I felt like it would be good to just kind of, you know, take a week and share my money story, right? So that's sort of the narrative of how I grew up with money and how I understand money. And, you know, some of the things that I did that are, you know, big time losses, and also, you know, maybe a win or two. It's not at all supposed to be an episode, or a show about like bragging or boasting, right? It's just, I want to share some of the things from the past, you know, 35 years, that I remember and that have shaped the way I think about money, the way I look at problems, and all of those things have gone and filled in all of the blanks for the Military Wealth Coach and what we put in our books and our blog posts and our podcasts. And the whole point of the Military Wealth Coach's existence is to give everyone, you know, first of all, like I nerd out on finance and I make my own spreadsheets and my own calculators and my own graphs and models. And there's a right answer out there, right? Like it's numbers, it's just math. So that means there is a right number out there, a right answer, and we can solve for it. Right. And that's what I'm trying to do for myself. And I thought, well, it's silly to just do that for myself if I could share it. And I think that's probably probably the biggest gap that is left in your life when you do leave the military, especially after a longish or longer career and of retirement, is your whole service, your time in uniform was fueled by service and like wanting to serve. And then all of a sudden, like you're just a private citizen again. And you've got your family and yourself to take care of. And, you know, some people, they redirect that energy and that motivation to service, and they redirect it into like their neighborhood, and they become like a homeowners association president and, you know, get made fun of in all sorts of TV shows and stuff like, even my kid watches like a cartoon movie Over the Hedge, which just is like, it's ruthlessly mocking homeowners association presidents. Right. And I think it's funny because I would never be one of those, but I have really close friends who are in those roles, and they're great people, and they're not anything like the cartoon. But, you know, and some people, they redirect their energy and their passion for service into their community through volunteering. Others do it with, you know, their church or religious organizations. Some just, you know, they, I don't know. They, you know, they come up with different ways because they want to give back and they want to help mentor and guide and share what they've learned over the years. And, you know, for me, it's like, well, I like volunteering, but like, you know, standing around and like helping kids clean up trash at a playground or walking dogs or, you know, whatever the case may be, like, I don't see a lot of impact on that. And that's why we created the Military Wealth Coach, and we do this whole thing is because if we can get the word out and we can share the information across the hundreds of thousands of people in uniform, you know, there's a really good chance that all of you who are in your early 20s, mid 20s, even all the way up in your 30s, maybe even those approaching retirement, you know, like the SBP episode was really for people who are, you know, late 30s, early 40s and starting to work into their retirement, you know, as my good friend calls it, you know, phase three operations. And that's, you know, so everybody in uniform, we're going to provide value through the Military Wealth Coach. And to me, that's a way to give back and continue to serve my fellow service members, right? And eventually we'll add in some content for veterans. You know, there's some great resources and podcasts and blogs out there already dedicated to VA benefits and working through disability and the things that are good for retirees. And I haven't lived that life yet, right? Like I haven't dealt with it. Other than filing my disability claim, I haven't dealt with it. And so I have minimal information to share on there at this point on that. And so what I can do is I can share, 35 years of thinking about money, being around money, and share lessons, both good and bad, with the community. And then, also through the nerding out bit, put in all the technical stuff and the math. And so I just thought it would be, even if it's not interesting to you, it'd be really rewarding for me to just kind of say some things about my money story in a little bit longer form, share them with you. And if you listen, great. If you don't, well, I got to say it. And sometimes that's enough, right? And so, when I think back to my childhood, when I was, you're probably 7 or 8 or 9, it's probably the kind of age at which I really can start to recall specific engagements with money and being aware of things about money. And to be honest, it was at that moment when I noticed a couple things. And what I noticed was that there were a couple families in my community. My hometown was a little over 1,000 people. We were sandwiched between a dairy farm and a pig farm. So depending on which way the wind blew, you got a different scent in your nose. The air had a different flavor. For those of you who didn't grow up in the country, I can tell you, once you've lived next to a pig farm, you will stop complaining about living next to a dairy farm. But anyway, there were a couple families, because it was a small town, there were a couple families that had money. They had the big houses, down on the south end of town, and they had nice cars, and the older siblings had nice cars. And those were sort of the first real impressions I had of money and wealth and status, I guess. But I looked at, my family, and we were doing totally fine, right? My parents owned a house. They bought it a few years before I was born. They had to get their parents to help them buy it. So it's not like they had any extra cash lying around. My dad was, we never talked about it. He didn't say anything, but I can put together over the years that he didn't make a lot of money at all. He was doing something he was passionate of and proud of, which was being a independent remodeling contractor and builder. And he would do everything from, blueprint designs all the way through finishing, and sometimes some of the trades, he would do himself. And he did great work, right? He was a true craftsman in that. But when you're one person and you're working through one project at a time and you're trying to do everything perfect, there's not a lot of turnover in the business. And so I knew that we as a family, we didn't have a lot. We weren't doing as bad as others. We were kind of a lower middle class situation. And I also saw that, there were kids out there and families out there that had a lot. And from that moment, money became something that I was always thinking of, and it was kind of how do you get more of it so that you can have that stuff, right? That's just kind of how it was. And it wasn't, at first it was probably for the first 10 or 15 years of my life. I wasn't an entrepreneurial or aggressive, kid who was I'm going to go work 3 jobs. And, because I have friends who did that. I have friends who, before they were 16, they went out and they got jobs and they worked through the school year and they didn't do sports at school or other clubs and activities because they just went to a job. And a couple of those kids, by the time they were in their early 20s, they were you know, they have families, they were homeowners, they had savings, they were doing awesome. But I, you know, I never connected the fact that, like, if you wanted that money, you had to do, like, unique, unusual, or extraordinary things. And so I, you know, and that was, there were a couple reasons for that. The first was that my parents gave me an allowance. They helped me cover expenses and buy things. And, you know, they encouraged me to, like, be a kid and be a teenager. So for the, you know, for the next several years, I would get an allowance every week, slightly more as the years went by, and along with it were a list of chores. And so I learned the connection between working and earning money. But when I needed extra money, I wasn't forced to go work for it, you know. And the first major example of that in my life was my first car, which cost $3,000. I had saved $2,000, and the summer I turned 16, I wanted to buy a car. I was looking, this was back in the, like, the classifieds in the paper, like, no internet, no Facebook, no smartphones. There wasn't internet, right? But it wasn't like Facebook Marketplace and Car Trader and all that stuff. And so it was literally flipping through a newspaper classifieds. And, you know, I was highlighting every price that was less than 2000, and I just couldn't find something that I liked, right? Which is, I mean, that's absurd, right? You're 16 years old. You have $2,000. Like, just shut up, you know? What do you mean you don't like it? Like, I ended up picking, you know, like a car that was as old as I was, a 16-year-old car that cost $3,000 because it had a turbo. And I was like, I want to go fast, right? And I told my parents about it, and they're like, well, how much did you save? I'm like, well, I'm up to like $2,015. Like, I'm still $1,000 short. And the next day, my dad's like, hey, look, I'll split it with you 50-50. That way you don't have to spend all your savings. I'll pick up the difference, and you can have the car you want. Well, the lesson learned from that was kind of obvious, right? Which was, cool, I can do my work, get some money, and then I'll find a way to get some help covering the gap, right? And it didn't really, there was no problem with that, right? Like, I came out a winner. I had a car. I still had $500 in the bank. No complaints there, and kept rolling. You know, I got to college, and you could see, like, the same sort of pattern forming in that I had more money that I'd saved up than from high school, and I went off. I had a full academic scholarship to go to college out of state, and so I did that. And I found out I could get, like, a loan from the government, a FAFSA. Filled out the FAFSA, and I got a loan to cover, like, food and lodging in the dorms. And so, yeah, I started borrowing money right away to cover my living costs. And my parents announced that my grandparents had left some money specifically earmarked to help me, that they wanted to pass, you know, their parents wanted to pass them and go straight to me to help me get my life started. And to be honest, you know, I squandered it, right? Like, I used that money that was given to me and the money I was able to borrow to cover all my expenses. And then I didn't work. I just worked a little bit. You know, I lost my first college job too, because I was working like 6 hours a week. And then when I went home, I just assumed they knew that since I was a college student, that I was not going to stick around for the summer. And so, like, I showed back up in September. I was like, hey, I'm here for my shift. And they're like, no, you're not. We fired you. You stopped showing up to work 3 months ago, dude. So a lot of stupid life lessons learned from a stupid kid, me. And I was racking up debt, and I was not really understanding how these things worked. And there was a little bit of a problem in there too, which is that folks at that point were, this is like now just late 1990s, I guess, early 2000s, like, everything was switching over to the internet. And so, like, people were investing, and I was interested in making money. And so what did I do is I, again, this is like trying to find the easy way or the fast way, is I got an E-Trade account. I took every dollar that I had saved and I put it in E-Trade, and I bought a bunch of like tech stocks. And in the first, you know, I think it was like the first 3 months living in the dorms as a freshman in college, I had like 10x'd my money. You know, like I thought I was a genius. I was like, I'm rich. By the end of my freshman year, I'm going to be a millionaire, you know? Like, it was pretty insane, the signals that that sent me. And, you know, so I kept buying stuff, which I wasn't paying for with my money. I was using the money my grandparents left me to buy stuff like, you know, bikes or computers or eventually, you know, beer and stuff like that. And then the tech bubble burst. And by the time that I was, you know, I didn't have any downside protection in my account. Like, I didn't have any options. I didn't have any stop loss limit orders. And so I just watched over the next, you know, 3 to 6 months, I just watched that account go down, down, down. And eventually two of my positions were liquidated because the stocks were delisted because they went totally bankrupt and out of business. And then what was left was like $200. You know, so I cashed that out, and who even knows what I did with it. But I'd lost several thousand dollars, and I was already, you know, almost five figures in debt by the time I was done being a freshman. And then after the following year, I got a roommate. We moved out into town. I don't want to make it sound like I'm a victim here, because I'm not, right? But he convinced me that it would be fine to get a 3-bedroom house, even though there are two of us, and then we could have like a bonus room for like bike storage and other storage. And we got into home brewing, so we had like a little brew lab, and we were just like spending. We were having big parties, having people over. That was, you know, we would buy the beer, and then he'd kind of be like, hey, just, you don't have to pay half, right? But this whole time excuse me, you know, I was using a credit card. And I was covering my rent and my food using the loans I'd taken. And I was working during the summer, but that wasn't quite enough. And I actually got to a point at which, like, I was literally broke. And what I mean by that is, you know, I had $180 in a savings account. I had a $2 bill in my wallet. I still have that $2 bill today to remind myself of that point. But then I had like $800 on a credit card, and it was coming due really fast. And it was just coincidentally the same month that, like, you know, talking to my parents, they're like, hey, just so you know, we don't know your current situation, but like the money from your grandparents left you, like, you know, that's kind of all been, it wasn't much, but it's all been spent. So like, just so you know, like, there's not going to be any sort of check in the mail next month. And so I realized at that point, like, okay, I have $180. I have an $800 credit card bill. Well, $182, right? An $800 credit card bill due next month, and I don't know how I'm going to pay it. And I didn't. You know, I made the monthly payments. I got a job. I took a second job. I started working hard, putting in lots of hours, cut back on socializing, cut back on sports. And I started to make money, and I paid off my credit card bill, and then I started saving up some more, and I started to realize that, like, you know, nothing comes free in life. And so that was, you know, kind of like, if you look at the first half of my life, like, that's my money story, right? Like, I wanted it, and I wanted the status that came with it, and I was either through family or through the government and the university, I was given crutches, fake money, right? Like, they were lending me money. They're like, you don't have to pay it back ever. Maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years, maybe in 3 years, but not now. So it was like free money. And that influenced a lot of my feelings now on just the need to, like, earn more, right? Because you can go to work in the military, and you can get your paycheck and you can get your housing allowance, and that's fine. But everybody knows that military pay is only competitive when you add in the value of like the free health insurance and free healthcare and, you know, free prescription medicine and the tax-free housing allowance and tax-free benefits when you're deployed. Like, that's the only way it catches up. But in, as far as like a pure cash value, like your salaries, it lags a little bit, especially on the enlisted, you know, NCOs and below. And so that really influenced why, you know, to this day, like I've got side hustles now to supplement the income, grow the pie, have more money to spend. And that's why I encourage everyone here in the community to look for ways, like constantly be looking for ways. You know, it's not just from reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad that I'm like, oh, you should have additional assets that pay you income. No, it's like from real life experience. You need to hustle, right? And the younger you are and the more you hustle when you're young, the easier it will be in the future, because you'll have more cash. You'll be able to invest it. You won't have the debt, and things will start snowballing for you in a positive way. Well, there's some other things that, I learned at that point that were some bad lessons, right? And I got afraid of investing. So like this money that I was making, it was just sitting in cash in a bank account. And, you know, that has to do obviously with getting wiped out by the dot-com bubble. And so I didn't really get back into investing for 4 or 5 years. And by that time, I'd finished college and gone off to grad school. And I had like $20,000. And, you know, this is like the shameful bit, is that I just literally repeated the script of what I did in college. And I've got a friend over here who's he's got a great expression. I'm not going to get it exactly right, but he basically says, like, you know, the third time that you think you know I get called a horse, I might as well buy a saddle. And what it's saying is, everybody makes a mistake once, and that's bad. The second time you make a mistake, like, it's kind of like your last warning. Okay, like you might want to go trot around and pretend you're a horse, or you might look the part, but you're still not a lost cause, right? You're only a lost cause if you repeat the mistake again. So the third time that you make the same mistake, well, now you're just an idiot, right? And that's what the expression means. The third time you called me a horse, I might as well go out and buy a saddle. And so in this case, what I did to repeat the script was, I had graduated from my undergrad. At that time, I tried to enlist. It was, you know, not long after 9/11, I tried to enlist in the Marine Corps. They pushed me over to an officer, selection officer. So I tried to commission in. I was medically not qualified because of a knee injury. And so I was working, and I was working three jobs because I had the hustle part down now, right? Like, I understood. I was like, I got bills to pay. I got rent. I got my student loans are due. I've got car insurance. Fortunately, I didn't have a car payment, which is good. But, you know, I'm renting a bedroom from some friends and sleeping on the floor on an air mattress and working three jobs. I'd go to my first job at 6:30 in the morning, and I'd work through till 3:30, and then my next job started at 4, and it went till midnight. And then on the weekends, I would deliver pizzas like all weekend, right? So I had the hustle part down, and I got that, and I was trying to build up cash, and but I felt like it wasn't enough. I was like, I want more. Like, I'm still barely getting by. I'm a college graduate. Like, I should be able to have more. I should have some savings. I should have a nicer car. Da 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 da. So what did I do? I applied to grad school, and I went to grad school, and I financed all of it. So in 2 years, I added $100,000 in debt to what was already about $25,000 in debt. And during those 2 years, I naturally bought a $25,000 truck financed, right? So I went from being a college grad who was like working three jobs and kind of pissed off about how little money I was making, because why? Well, I was like 22 or 23 and like generally unskilled, right? So So naturally, just go out and take on six figures of debt, quit working, and go be a student full time again, right? And, you know, the logic was, I'll get this graduate degree, and that will make me competitive, and that will get me the job I need. And so 2 years go by, I go from being $25,000 in debt to $150,000 in debt. And what else did I do? And this is, again, this is why, like, it's such a ridiculously stupid thing, is I also, all the cash that I had that I could have used to pay for some of my lifestyle costs, or that I could have used to buy a more affordable vehicle without financing, I put it all into the stock market again through E-Trade, right? I was like, let it ride, you know? And it just so happened that, you know, then after finishing grad school and working for a couple of years, the Marine Corps, that was back in the plus up, and they took me in. And so I finally got to fulfill my dream of being a Marine. And not too long after that was the Great Recession, right? So for a short time, I was making good money, but then I was making second lieutenant pay. And back in, at that time, it was like $30,000 a year. I think second lieutenants or O1s make like 45K base now, but back then it was like 30. And then I lost like my life savings in the Great Recession and like the stock market crash back in like 07, 08. So I, like I said, you know, I followed the exact same script. I may have like been aware of the lessons of going off to college and being broke and throwing away all my money in a stock market crash and not having any downside protection or anything like that. But I lost a lot of money. And it was at this point that deployments bailed me out, right? Because now I was able to collect my entitlements. Most of the year was earning tax-free income, and was able to save back up a bunch of money, pay off some of the student loans, pay off a truck loan, and start to get like my financial house in order. And these are a lot of the things that it took me until, you know, my mid to late 20s to figure it out. And it took a lot of pain, and it took me, you know, doing the same stupid thing twice. And so that's why these are such core things that I put in my messages here with the Military Wealth Coach about having emergency savings that are secured in high yield savings accounts, right? If you saved up $2,000 from high school, $20,000, you know, from your first deployment or enlistment, you don't want to lose it when that inevitable, you know, market crash or something bad happens. You got to keep that money safe. And also, a lot of why I talk about avoiding stupid, silly debt like cars and other such things, and being so careful about when you take on debt that it's going to pay you back, right? Because ultimately, what I also realized is that I had, you know, invested $125,000 in grad school in myself, really close to $150,000 include all the undergrad loans. And that grad school didn't get me more money as a Marine Corps officer. Right. So like I have a big fat 0% return on investment from all of that money that I borrowed and had to pay back. And I didn't pay it back until my last year in the military. So, you know, we're talking about, it took me like 20 years to pay off all my student loans, and at a monthly cash flow of anywhere from negative 500 to 1,000 or more. I think at the highest I was paying like $1,150 a month in student loans. Plus about $850 in auto loans. So that was typical. Like that's what 80% of Americans do, right? Just borrow money to buy stuff now that they can't actually afford. And then they live in debt with massive monthly payments for decades. And so you can see, like, once again, like having how I lived through it, and I felt the pain, and I saw that it was a dumb thing to do. And that there, since then, that I, you know, I've discovered better ways to get the same things you want. That's where they come out in, you know, the lessons and the opinions that we share here, and the tips and the strategies. And, you know, so now we kind of look back at as I'm getting older, I took away some of the wrong lessons and from my market endeavors and losing all the money in the stock market. I didn't want any of my money in the stock market. So now I was just saving cash and I was buying stuff. Well, that means by the time I was, you know, a captain and which is 03 in the Marine Corps, you know, now I'm standing up in front of like companies and battalions giving courses like for reset training or personal financial management, annual training, back in the saddle training, all that stuff. And, you know, telling people about thrift savings plan and how to invest and all that stuff. But I had zero retirement savings. I didn't start saving for retirement until I was like 32. There's basically like this point at which I realized like, you know, you can't be afraid of the past. You can be smart. You can protect your investments from major loss, but you can't avoid all the losses. But the only thing that's worse than a loss is having absolutely nothing. And so I started aggressively getting into saving for retirement through the thrift savings plan or an individual retirement account. And I was sort of like a retirement maxer, right? I was just trying to like scratch and claw and get caught up and put as much as I could away for retirement because I had friends who told me how much they had. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, this captain over here has got $250,000 in his TSP and I have zero. Like I've got a big, big gap to cover here. And so I went into this all out mode, max out mode, which was necessary, right? But at the same time, what happened when I was maxing out? This is in my 30s now. I needed to get a new car, but I had to finance it because I didn't have any cash. I had a couple emergencies come up, plane tickets, phones, car repairs, even like a security deposit on an apartment or like a duplex, I guess it was not an apartment. And where did I get the money for that? Credit cards, right? Because I didn't have any savings. I had no emergency savings. And it's not that I didn't think I should have them. Of course, nobody had ever taught me about it or explained to me. So I didn't know about it, but like I knew you should have some cash. But it was because I was saving everything for retirement. And so all through my 30s, it was like, I don't have enough money for a house. I don't have enough money for a car, but I make enough. And so going through the 30s, there are some more real important lessons that I learned. And, you know, first it was you have to remove bad debt from your life. And so when you have $2,000 a month in auto payments and student loan payments on top of whatever it costs to live, from mortgage, rent, food, bills, grocery, and stuff, you really can't get ahead. And then if every penny that you have, you're saving for 30 years from now, like you're never going to escape that debt trap. You're never going to actually have enough cash now to enjoy your life. And so, you know, you'll see all over the place, like in our lessons and our tips and strategies that we say, you can't max out your TSP. If the only thing you have is an IRA, you should max that out because that's only $7,000 a year. But under no circumstance do you need to save $24,000 a year into your TSP, because if you do, that's pretty much all your savings. But also that money, you can't have that money for 30 years. And you'll hear plenty of people, especially on, you know, TikTok or Instagram, they're like, everybody says that saving into a Roth IRA or Roth 401k or TSP, you know, it's that money's gone forever. But that's not true, because you can withdraw your principal anytime you want and just let the gains stay in there and you don't get in trouble. And it's like, no, dude, that is awful advice, because when you pull out the foundation, right, you pull the carpet out from somebody's feet, it's going to topple over. You can't take money back out. I can't. If I saved, you know, think about how silly it would be if all those years in my 30s, I'd, you know, finally saved up like over $100,000, $150,000 into my TSP for retirement. And then I was like, oh, I can just take 80 of that back out so that I can go buy this house or buy a car cash. No, because then what happened? Now I have only half, you know, I only have 80,000 saved. I just erased all the gains, and it's going to take me down the line. That money should double every 8 or 9 years, which means it's going to take me 8 or 9 years to get back to where I was at that time. And so fortunately, you know, I never took back any principal or took out anything from my retirement accounts, and hopefully you don't either. there are people out there who say you should or you can, but you should mentally, you got to treat it like, no, that's OB. That money is only for retirement, so you can't look at it. But I, you know, that's why I learned the lesson of like, you can't only save for retirement because then you have nothing for right now. And that really forms a lot of how we structure in, you know, the book. It's been finished. It just needs to be edited and the graphics need to be done and the cover needs to be done for the Ultimate Military Retirement Plan, which is a book that it explains step by step how to split your savings between retirement and for living right now. And it's basically, you know, to be quite honest, like that book is written from looking back over the past 20 years and saying, if I had another chance, if I could have done this again, how would I do it? And so I packed 20 years worth of lessons about investing and financial planning into that book and give you, you know, in it, it's like, there's a roadmap. There's just, it's like a month by month, how much to save and where to put it and how to allocate it over 20 years to turn yourself into a multimillionaire. All right. And it's just, honestly, it's just what I would have done if I could do it all over again. And, you know, the funny thing is in the last year of my career, you know, I got into the final couple months and I finally announced to my students, that I was retiring. You know, I waited until they were like, are you going to teach this course again next fall? Because I have some friends. I'm going to tell them to come take it because it's awesome and we love it. And I was like, actually, you guys, I'm retiring at the end of the year. And I'd love to come back. I'd love to stay here forever, actually, teaching at the academy. Because everyone who has been in the classroom as a teacher knows that you learn just as much as you share. And it's an incredible opportunity to meet people and to grow yourself and then to help, you know, if you're a good teacher, if you figure out how to teach, then you help facilitate their growth too. And that's like the ultimate reward for anyone who's brought up as a leader in the military, where you judge yourself by the ability of your people to flourish and succeed. And so, yeah, I mean, it was a great time, but you know, when I finally told them like, I'm out of here, you know, they're like, well, is there any, you know, do you regret anything? Would you do it over again? And I didn't know how to answer that. But like after reflecting on it and being asked a couple times, I realized like the answer was simple. I would absolutely do it over again, everything. But I'd do a little bit different. And the one thing I would do different would have been the financial side. And my regret was that I didn't take it seriously earlier when I was younger. Quite frankly, you know, everything that we've been able to accomplish financially ourselves by using these strategies and these tips that we've kind of like, I don't want to say perfected, right? But we've like designed and evolved over the last about 6 years now, and which are the basis for all the lessons in the Military Wealth Coach. You know, those strategies created, you know, a couple million dollars of wealth in just a few short years. And they wouldn't have worked all the time, right? Like they wouldn't have worked if you just like started in 2006 and stopped in 2009 or 10 or 12, you know, through the Great Recession and the housing crisis and all that stuff. But over the long haul, you know, just give it time, right? 10 years from now, you just keep pushing it forward. Like if doing nothing else, they'll double in the next 10 years. And, you know, you just kind of look at it and you're like, wow, if only I'd started this when I was 25 instead of 35 or maybe even younger. And it's possible to start younger. And so that's, you know, when you get to the end of the road to where I am today, you know, sort of like the current chapter in my money story is another thing that, you know, everything I do is like nonconformist and contrarian. I'm like, no, don't max out your TSP. Absolutely opt out of the survivor's benefit program. Don't live in base housing. Buy used cars with cash. Never finance. You know, invest in real estate. Don't just invest in the stock market. You know, like there's all sorts of things that I say that are, you know, or like even, you know, you should be saving into your traditional TSP and not your Roth TSP. And then when you deploy, you do a mega backdoor Roth conversion, right? So you every year you can deduct like $10,000, $7,000 from your income, save yourself like $1,000 in taxes. And then when you're deployed and all your income's tax-free, then you convert all that money to Roth, right? But everybody in the military is like, oh, just max out, put it all in the Roth. Like, no, there's better ways to do it, and I could prove it with the numbers. And so, you know, kind of like you get up to this like final or this current chapter and like the contrarian nonconformist thinking about money continues. And so that's where I'm going to kind of leave off, which is in this current phase of my life in which I'm just trying to be an entrepreneur and a property manager and a business person and, you know, have my military pension and not be working full time. You know, we are technically, as a family, we are technically FIRE. We are financially independent and able to retire early. But what we recognized is that the traditional definition of FI is that your investment income, your passive income, pays for your expenses. And yes, that's true. We achieved that, and you know, we're able to make the decision, like, I'm not going to go back to work right away after retiring from the military. And you don't have any extra money, though. When you're just FI, all of a sudden, you know, that 40% savings rate, and here's just an example using easy numbers. If you're every year you spend $100,000, $60,000 is on your life, and $40,000 is savings and investments, you technically reach FI when you have $60,000 of passive investment income because it covers all your living expenses. And you can be like, oh, I'm done. And then you forget that you need another $40,000 to meet your savings and investment goals for the year. And so you're really, you know, you're just over halfway there. And for that reason, you know, like FIRE is, to me, it's not a good strategy. It's not practical. There's a thing called COAST FI or COAST FIRE, which basically says that like once you get to a certain number, like on a certain flight path in which your investments are growing, you can kind of, you know, ease off the throttle from the savings. And then you can also like tone down how much you're working, but you can't actually stop working. You still need to have enough income to pay for other stuff. So it's kind of like a part-time FI thing. And, you know, my sort of current view and the things that we put out there, and I think, you know, we put it in the Service and Wealth book, and maybe there'll be a blog post about it in the future, maybe a podcast too, is like, you're really not ever FI until your investments not only cover your expenses, but they replenish themselves, so they also cover your savings, and they do it at a rate that's 20 years in the future. Because if they keep going at the current rate, eventually inflation is going to crush your finances, and you're going to be 70 and you're going to have to go get a job at Costco. So you actually have to, you know, can't have an FI number based on right now. You have to have an FI number 20 years in the future. And then that's how you know that you've made it. And, you know, that'll be crystal clear. Again, it's not crystal clear right now in the Ultimate Military Retirement Plan book because it's been written but not edited. So we're going to go back and we got to finish editing, and we'll make it crystal clear that that's what the Ultimate Retirement Plan does for you, is you basically plug in that we show you how to figure out your future number that you need and then work it all the way back and set your savings rates. And you can almost, you know, predict like when you can actually retire and what your lifestyle is going to look like, because you did the, well, we're going to do the work for you, right? We made the map, we did the numbers, and we give the spreadsheets with the plans. And that's really something that we can do too as part of the coaching side of the business, which, you know, I've talked to a few individuals, done some consultations and stuff, and we've covered a whole range of things. But, you know, if that's something that you're, if you don't just care about what should I do with my IRA or what should I do with my TSP or what should I do about buying my first house or how does a VA loan work, what should I do about buying this car? Like, if you actually want to talk retirement, you know, that's part of the service that our coaching business offers, which is, you know, you tell us the goal, tell us your income, tell us where you are now, tell us how much time you have. And between that call and the next call, we'll do all the math and we'll come back and be like, hey, here are two routes that you can take to get to where you want to get to. And then all you have to do is log into your accounts and set up your automatic deposits and you'll be on your flight path. You'll just be coasting, right? So overall, look, I'm going to wrap it up. I know we're coming up on an hour just from the numbers on the recording studio thing. What's it called? GarageBand. That's what I'm using. Not endorsing it. I don't know. I should probably have a tape recorder based on how old I am and how not good I am with this stuff. But but we are coming up on an hour, and I hope, like, you know, walking through sort of my background and my money story, it kind of explains like why it's so central to my thinking and the way I look at life, and why we're such a nonconformist, you know, brand at the Military Wealth Coach, which is because for so many years we did the things everybody else did and we followed all the advice and, you know, invested how the financial advisors tell you to invest, and everything ended up not great. Even if the market was good, it was still not great. There's a better way, and it's all, you can solve it all. And you just have to, like, either get the knowledge or find somebody who's got it and then trust them and go with them. And so that's what our brand is. 25 years worth of, you know, book learning and street learning about personal finance and investing and real estate and all that bits. And we just share it with the community as a way to give back and continue to serve all of our fellow service members, you know, in the U.S. military, all the branches, Guard and Reserve too. I know I don't really point them out, or Coast Guard even. I don't call them out as much as I should. And we'll eventually put some content out specific to, you know, considerations for reservists, because they have different time considerations and years owed for various things and benefits and points and retirement planning. But we're not there yet, right? Because that's not our core expertise. So we're going to continue to stick to our guns, which is helping out anybody who's ever been active duty or still on active duty, recently retired, and help you unlock and solve all these riddles that have to do with money and military pay and benefits. So one final thought that I'll leave you with is, like, obviously I kind of glossed over some of the last 6 to 8 years of the money story. And that's because, like, that experience and those lessons are everything that we have across the brand: podcasts, blogs, coaching service, books, right? Like, it, all of that in there, that's, you get that part of the money story when you read those lessons and learn about those tactics. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. If you're still out there, I really feel fortunate to get the chance to share that money story and talk a little bit about my background and where some of these things come from. And I look forward to getting back next week into the conversation. As I said, September, we're going to do a focus on the blended retirement system, so a very military-specific bit. And we'll have a blog post out that kind of, like, gets the foundation set of what it is. And then, you know, next week, probably the next 2 weeks, maybe three, but definitely the next 2 weeks, we're going to follow up and we're going to start talking specific tips and strategies and how you can make the blended retirement system work for you and also avoid some costly mistakes. And when I say costly, I'm talking about the way it's structured with continuation pay and the lump sum option. You can leave anywhere from, you know, $1,000 to $10,000 of your money in the pockets of the IRS if you don't plan appropriately. And we'll talk about how you can plan for that so that you can keep 100% of your continuation pay bonus. And a similar bit with the lump sum for retirement. You know, again, tax man could take a big chunk out of it, but on the flip side, you can take those lump sum payments at retirement, and you can flip them into investments that can double or triple whatever you had to give up on your pension. And you can be, you know, you can literally achieve financial freedom with the kind of windfall that you can earn when you finally retire and get that lump sum. So we'll hit that up next week. So that'll be starting on the 15th. Sunday the 15th and Sunday the 22nd of September, and maybe the 29th, we'll be talking all things blended retirement system. So thanks again for listening in. This has been the Service and Wealth Podcast. Please check out our website, militarywealthcoach.com. You'll find links to all of our social accounts. You can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, now known as X, TikTok, YouTube, etc. YouTube, our YouTube channel is Military Wealth Coach, and you can get content over there. And then also, while you're on our website, please sign up, get our weekly newsletter, so you'll be the first to know of all things coming out, including new books when we drop those. And you can also get early access to our free mini course that's still delayed, but still on its way. So, all right, we are getting out of here. Thank you, everybody. Stay safe, be financially fit, and mission ready.